When the Canucks miss the playoffs again.
When Jim Benning trades away all our picks.
When Goldolbin is scratched for the third game in a row.
C4 is there.
With Sedin-like vision, Horvat's work ethic, and Petey's electric personality.
Here comes the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast.
With Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Powered by Overtime Media.
Matt Lee and Anna Forsyth in the house. It is the C4 Podcast brought to you by Overtime Network. We are broadcasting live from the Vivid Seats Studio in beautiful downtown Vancouver. Chris Golden in Hawaii, so he is dead to us. Anna, how are you?
Well, I'd be a lot better if I was in Hawaii instead of stuck in the hot box with you, but...
So I know Chris Golden has been so nice of him to share with us some of the photos from Hawaii.
I know, especially on a day like today.
Do you ever find that he does that on purpose whenever he goes on vacation and stuff like that?
Oh yeah, for sure he's doing it on purpose.
I hate when he does that.
I mean, he's also put on Facebook a little cute snap of him and Baby Force. So.
Yeah, we get it. You're in Hawaii, Chris.
Yeah, and we're in rainy Vancouver.
Not one to brag though. Pull a page out of Chris's book. But next Thursday... I will also be in Hawaii myself.
Oh, damn you.
So apparently half the show is going on vacation to Hawaii.
Wait, like you're going for Thanksgiving weekend or the one after?
After Thanksgiving weekend. So next Thursday, the 17th, I will be gone. So I will not be here for the episode that following Monday.
But Chris will be back.
Unfortunately.
We're dragging him back
Unfortunately,
from Hawaii.
I will make sure he gets on the plane.
Okay.
Anna, the Canucks jumped out to a less than ideal start to their season there, 0-2. They've been shut out once. Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser both have not scored so far this year. And the power play is a combined 0-10. Sky's falling, right?
Yeah, I'm panicked.
So we'll get into that panic level, if you will. I don't know if you can call it panic or not, but definitely a less than ideal start to the season. Man, this window is very clear, by the way. We're here in the Vivid Seats studio,
windows
and there's a glass window,
clear, Matt, yeah.
And it actually looks like I'm very nervous because I feel like I'm talking to the rest of the library.
No one's listening.
Never mind, I see my hand waving in front of the glass.
Yeah, it's fine.
Meanwhile, we will dissect just what has gone wrong through that 120 minutes of game action thus far. The line juggling, by the way, which is already taking place. Travis Green putting his lines in a blender, at least the top two lines, if you will. The line juggling also, which isn't happening on this lineup, as well as previewing Wednesday's home opener versus the LA Kings. Finally, the home opener is upon us.
Hockey is back in town. It's happening. It's real.
All that coming up next on the C4 Podcast, CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
He liked to say the F word.
Go and get the F here then. Okay, see ya.
He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you an explanation about it. I can't.
You out of here.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
Serious question. How many F words did you drop during, let's say, Saturday night's game against the Calgary Flames?
A few.
I'm not going to lie. I had a little drink on Saturday night. An adult beverage, if you will. And even that wasn't enough to numb the pain that was Saturday night's game.
No, it was brutal. I was watching the game with friend of the show, Annalise. And I think she honestly had an existential crisis after that 5-on-3 power play that went nowhere.
And you know what? I remember the 5-on-3. I remember it was early in the third period, correct? And
yes.
It was, I remember saying to friends, if we don't score on this 5-on-3, we might as well just be in F-town instead of Cowtown is what I said.
Throw in the towel for the rest of the season. Done.
So yes, there were some F words that were thrown around on that Saturday evening, Anna. Real talk, on a scale of 1 to 10, though, how worried are you through two games?
The number's pretty high if I think this is an indication of how we're going to play for the rest of the season, because it was bad, real bad. But I don't think that's true, so the number isn't that high. We're just going mid-range here, 4 or 5.
I'm actually, maybe surprisingly, I'm actually less panicked than you. I'm actually a 2.
Whoa. 2? Look at this optimistic man.
And I'll tell you why. Especially on those top 2 lines where we saw Ferland, Pettersson, and Besser, and Miller, Horvat, and Pearson for the first 2 games of this season. We got to keep in mind a couple things. Michael Ferland missed almost the entirety of training camp, did not play much, if at all, very sparingly at best, let's say, with Pettersson and Besser. JT Miller, also a new addition who Horvat and Tanner Pearson have not played with. Those top 2 lines just don't have chemistry yet formed because of the fact that they're new. And I expected there to be some of those growing pains when you bring in new additions. Even to a smaller extent as well, Tyler Myers playing with his defensive partner, which we saw with that lapse in judgment, if you will, on that turnover, which led to the Calgary goal.
Not to go off the rails immediately, but do you think do you think we're beyond the era where you have those iconic lines that stick together for years and years?
Like, do you see, like, a consistent top line, tried and true, forever and ever?
Yeah.
No, I agree. That is less and less common.
Gone now, right?
However, like, we had all penciled these to be the top 2 lines from the start for a reason.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And it was made so that there could be a solid, consistent option at Travis Green's disposal. And I think, and this might be an unpopular opinion, I think it was a little early to start switching the 2 between Ferland and Miller, swapping them on the top 2 lines.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that that's what they're going with in practice today, swapping, moving Ferland onto the second line, Miller onto the top. And it does seem a bit early, given, as you say, Ferland missed all that time of training camp and Besser too. Like, you can't expect them to develop immediate chemistry. So, you know, giving them 2 games or fewer than with the line juggling, yeah, it seems a bit hazy to me also.
Now, that said, because we're in the infancy of this regular season, Anna, I am all for trying new things out. In some cases, it is rare, but in some cases, I do find that if you try a new line out, sometimes there is that little flash of instant chemistry, if you will. So, of course, there is a very minimal risk in terms of putting JT Miller, say, on this top line with Pettersson and Besser. Because maybe if you try them out in game action, that there is suddenly chemistry and maybe you suddenly have something. So we are at a stage right now where it is okay to experiment and try different players in different situations. Maybe we'll strike lightning in a bottle if we have this little line juggle at the top. So, in other words, going into Wednesday night's home opener, Anna, do you expect those lines that we saw in practice today to be the lines that we see on Wednesday night?
Yeah, I think they're going to go with that for a bit longer because they clearly liked what they saw from the time they switched them out together. So, I think they're trying to find that instant chemistry between some of these new players here. So, I'd expect them to start that way. But we have seen that Travis, yeah, is not afraid to shake things up if it's not working.
Outside of maybe that lack of familiarity, if you will, what else has contributed to the Canucks being slow out of the gates to start the season? Again, 0-2, 0-10 on that power play, not much going there between Pettersson and Brock Besser. What else would you say would be one single reason why the Canucks have struggled as much as they have?
That power play, man. Like, 10 is a lot of shots, right, to get a power play within 2 games. And
0-10, what's the percentage on that?
I mean, there isn't one. It's 0%.
Oh, 0?
Yeah.
Is that bad? It sounds bad.
Yeah. I mean, we both know that neither of us do maths, but because we were told there would be none. But, yeah, that's not good, right?
Yeah, and we'll talk about the power play in the next segment as well. But I mean, yeah, the numbers are not good. The power play, I mean, you brought in Ferland, you brought in Miller for those 2 guys to be contributors on the power play as well. But the power play is certainly not cooking as well. How do you feel about what we've seen from Jacob Markstrom so far? Has he given the Canucks enough of a chance through the first 2 games to at least be in a game?
I can't pin either of the losses on Markstrom here.
Yep.
There was quite a few times when he was left High and Dry, which looked all too familiar, a situation where you just had that attacker just springing through and breaking through that defense, and Jacob Markstrom's left to make the save. I don't think he's been stellar in either of the games, but I also think it would be harsh to blame him for the losses. Do you see that, like, sliding save he made?
Yep.
That was fun.
Very nice save.
Yeah.
Another reason why I think this team has sort of struggled, if you will, it is just the nuances of starting a new season. Pucks seem to be just jumping over sticks. The flow and breakouts just don't seem to be there as crisply as they would be in midseason. I'm not panicked. And again, I know that seems weird coming from me, who is the king of overreaction and knee-jerk reactions, but I'm not worried because I know that the talent on this roster is more than capable of putting some wins together. They probably deserved a better fate in the first game against the Edmonton Oilers. I thought they were right in it before, obviously, we saw the Brandon Sutter giveaway, which led to the Connor McDavid winner.
Yep.
Brutal. I mean, I thought last Wednesday the Canucks deserved maybe at least a point because I thought that they had played otherwise a very solid road game in that game.
Yeah. I do agree, but, you know, it's the strength of the opposition there. Calgary is a much stronger opposition.
Oh, totally. And I'm not sort of suggesting that Vancouver was at all in that Calgary game. It did not look like they were engaged right from almost the start.
No. So I just think beating Edmonton, whether it's on the road or not, should be almost expected.
Sure.
But it was a first game of the season, so I will qualify with that. And I did predict a loss, so...
So... Getting into back again, panicking. How much more would a home loss to what should be a very bad LA Kings team move the needle in terms of panic?
Yeah, more so. That's when we should start getting worried.
I agree with you, and I will say this. If you lose what should be an electric home opener to the LA Kings, that will be enough to start me to panic. It would be enough to get me to move from a 2 out of 10 to at least like a 5.
A 5. So that's not that high.
Again, like, we're still 2 games in the season.
We'll still be three after that. Yeah.
Like, even if we beat the LA Kings, it's not going to move enough to make me less panicked than a 2.
Okay, sure. I agree with that. If we lose to them and the play is much more encouraging than it was on Saturday, then I probably won't move my panic meter at all.
Sure. If anything, I'll take you one further. I would be okay with them losing a close game to the LA Kings if the power play starts connecting on Wednesday night.
Exactly.
If we see a little bit more better flow on the breakouts and stuff like that. Like, if we see the passes really start to connect and that there are a lot of scoring chances generated from the Canucks. If we see all those things, I would feel better about it. I just need some sort of spark, if you will, in these early stretches of the season to show that this team is on track to at least be a bubble team this season.
Yeah. Because that's the concerning thing, right? There was something in Edmonton, but in Calgary, there was close to nothing.
At the end of the day, I'm not ready to sound the alarm bells like Steven Stamkos was sounding in Tampa Bay. Did you see some of those comments? Essentially called out his team saying, if we're going to play like that, it's going to be a long season or something to that effect.
Wow.
And that's coming from Steven Stamkos and a almost near record-setting Tampa Bay team last year in the regular season.
President's Trophy winners.
So I'm not going to go so far as Steven Stamkos to overreact to the first 2 games of the season, but there are some little symptoms of concern for the Canucks is what I would say at this point.
Yeah.
Getting to individual performances, who has sort of stuck out for you, Anna, through the first 2 games? Who has impressed you positively?
Tanner Pearson, man.
Oh, really? Tell me why.
11 shots.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Did you see Calgary coach Bill Peters, who said there was someone on the Canucks who had 11 shots?
I know.
I don't know
Tanner
who it is,
Pearson.
But we're going to focus on that person. And I joked in Discord and like, someone tell him it was Louis Erickson.
Exactly. But yeah, someone, poor Tanner Pearson, like, gets 11 shots, still no one remembers his name. I just like the fact that we were questioning his role as a second line player. But just because of his chemistry with Bo, we're kind of like, okay, sure, let's give it a go again. And it seems to be still there. And yeah, I just like his jump. I liked his energy more than anything else. But yeah, I thought he was quietly going under the radar's quite an impressive start.
So let me ask you this question, and I talked about this with Chris Faber on the Canucks Conversation podcast, which I just so happened to be on.
I heard it.
Did you hear my segment with him?
Yeah, I didn't listen to my segment and turn it off.
Yeah, me too.
You so didn't listen to mine.
Anyway, I did mention how much praise I had for Tanner Pearson, at least throughout the preseason and what we've seen through him in training camp, and I'll let you sort of double down on this if you will. You talked about how Tanner Pearson effectively made Sven Berchi expendable. Are you willing to double down on that now?
Well, I don't think that's the case, but I think that's, like, from my perspective,
I think
he's
Tanner
not
Pearson was
expendable.
One of the people who made Sven Berchi expendable. Like, Sven Berchi had always been that left wing, right wing guy for Bo Horvat.
Sure.
And then Tanner Pearson comes along, rattles off, what was it, 9 goals in the 19 games, the Vancouver Canucks final 20 games of the season or so. Really looked like he belonged on that second line. And he's got the durability, the Stanley Cup pedigree as well. Is Tanner Pearson a fixture, if you will, on that second line throughout this season?
I don't know. If it might be a little early to say that when we can't even figure out what each line is. But I do think you're right in that Sven is one of the people that's also had chemistry with Bo and has always kind of occupied that second line spot. So I do think that Tanner Pearson has made it his own.
Mm.
So I think, but I just rather see Sven on a like third line, like left winger role. I think
right.
He still has a job to do there. So, but I do think if Sven comes back up, he doesn't like, unless Tanner's injured, I don't think he jumps on a line with Bo.
Right. Other Canucks that have sort of impressed me through the first two games of the season, I really feel that JT Miller has come as advertised. I have liked the energy that he seems to bring on that in that top six role. I think that JT Miller is one of those rare Vancouver Canucks wingers, Anna, that actually elevates the play of those he plays with.
Yeah, and I think that's also part of the package that we hope we're getting with him, for him to fill that mentorship kind of role as well. And I think he has done that. He, you know, he was through camp. There were stories of him, you know, getting annoyed with players in drills if they weren't performing. So I think you're right on that. And he just seems competent, right? He just knows what he's doing on mm-hmm. the ice. That you never see that moment of panic with him.
Right. Maybe give me one player who's performed below what your expectations were so far this season. And again, this is again acknowledging early days, that it's been 2 games, but still, we're a podcast and we like to knee-jerk reaction.
I don't know if anyone's particularly underperformed. Some people might throw Hughes out there, but I wasn't necessarily expecting
Not
him
buying
to
that at all.
Light it up like right out the
Not
gate.
Not even that though, like I think Hughes is just as electric as he was before the season. I am not concerned whatsoever on Quinn Hughes.
Okay, yeah, I'll join you with that. I think he's performed fine.
Not that we expected much out of Louis Erickson, but like through one game has been...
Yeah.
You would have fooled me into thinking average. He's not even on this team.
Mainly, maybe you can throw Tyler Myers in
so
there.
So that was going to be the name I was going to bring up. And of course, like I think it's unfair to paint him with this because that one giveaway that which led to the Calgary goal, like it was a very egregious giveaway, if you will. Like I'm not sure where he was looking there, and I think Travis Green defended him after the game. It was just a bad play that he clearly owned up to right away after that one, like to Jacob Markstrom, and Markstrom displaying the leadership, saying like don't worry about it, etc., etc. Those are the kind of growing pains, if you will, coming from a guy who's like 6'6", by the way. Those are the kind of growing pains that come with being the new guy on the team. Like playing defense for a team that you've never played with, those kind of things do happen. If they're happening by game 41, I'm probably ringing the alarm bells, but it's game 2 and I'm not too worried about it.
No, I agree. I don't want to blow this one play out of proportion, so this is the last thing I'll say on it. To me, whoever is not a chemistry thing, that's a dumb move. Like, whatever team you're playing with, you don't make that pass.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, you know, a defender in football, like, passing it across the box with an attacker right there. It's just dumb play. But, as you say, growing pains, first couple of games, I will also say the fact that, like, he created that gold that was eventually credited to Tanner Pearson.
Yep.
So in terms of a kind of bomber from the blue line, that's going to be useful down the stretch, hopefully. So
what was a more egregious giveaway? Tyler Myers' giveaway in Calgary or Brennan Sutter's, which led to the Connor McDavid winner?
I want to say Tyler Myers because it was right by the goal.
Yeah, but again,
and he's a defenseman.
Yeah, but I think on
both
the Sutter turnover, he had a little bit of room. Like, you could tell that the line that was out there was clearly gassed. They wanted the change. And Sutter, I think, had about 10 feet of room to skate it at least to center before he chips it in.
Okay.
And,
I mean,
and
I'd
I
have
think
to watch
he was gassed,
sure.
And it was a running on fumes kind of giveaway, but that is something that a quote-unquote foundational player should not be giving up.
Yeah. No, it was bad. Don't
and
get me wrong.
And we already know that, or at least we believe that the leash is already short with Brennan Sutter, and that's something that a player who should be a stronger two-way player should not be making. So I will say that in defense of Tyler Myers and against Brennan Sutter.
Yeah, that's fine.
Coming up next, we're going to take a break, but when we get back to it here on Rewind, this is, I'm hoping the only time I have to bang on the table for it. But what will it take to get Quinn Hughes on Power Play 1? Just give us what we want. All coming up next, C4 Podcast, CanucksHockeyBlog.com. C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. And Anna, 120 minutes into the NHL regular season for the Vancouver Canucks. And Quinn Hughes has been not even close to Power Play 1. He's got a great vantage view of Power Play 1 from the comforts of the end of the bench for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yep.
For those who have sort of missed it so far and you've been, you know, in Hawaii, let's say, for the last few days, Power Play 1 shaping up as Edler, Pettersson, Besser, JT Miller, and Josh Levo. That leaves Power Play 2 looking like Bo Horvat with Michael Ferland and Tanner Pearson on the wings, and Quinn Hughes and Tyler Myers manning the point. Now, with respect to Travis Green, he mentioned how in preseason, Alex Edler and on Power Play 1, they generated something like 3 power play goals in one game. So it was on him, in his mind, to at least commit to Alex Edler on Power Play 1 to start the year. But Anna, as we mentioned off the top of the podcast, 0-10 on the power play through the first two games of the NHL regular season, and the results still have not quite been there.
Yeah, I think that's what's disappointing, because we mentioned before about Travis changing up his lines to try and get some energy, some spark, some chemistry. So I can understand, I'll accept the argument to start Edler out on Power Play 1, but I think it should be before you get to 0-10 that you realize it's not working. Let's try something else. Even if it's just a one-time thing, let's just throw Quinn out there. Let's see what happens.
I think that ever since we saw this little glimpse of it at the start, fans have been banging on the table to see Quinn Hughes setting up both Pettersson and Besser. We saw it in that 3-on-3 against the LA Kings.
It's a beautiful thing.
Which felt like forever ago, by the way.
Back in Utah?
Well, not even that. The LA Kings, like, at the end of the regular season. Oh. You know what I'm talking about? The 3-on-3 overtime?
Oh, sure.
Like, ever since then, I can't wait for, like, 15 years of this.
Yeah. No, that was what was great. He was just, as you say, as advertised, like, with Hughes, he was just like, oh, he is that attacking defenseman that we heard about. He is that power play, like, star. And now it's just like, oh, we don't get to see him.
And for those who don't follow The Athletic, Harmdale brings up some really amazing videos which show just how great Quinn Hughes is at gaining the zone on the power play. There are situations where he's being pressured by a forechecker on the opposition. He'll turn back. He can turn on a dime, and then he'll reverse and try it again on what looks like a broken play, and he will gain the entry zone himself. Like, Quinn Hughes carries the puck on his string, and it is such a rare skill set that no one on the Canucks blue line has. Like, show me a clip where Alex Edler is doing what Quinn Hughes is doing on a quite regular basis.
Yeah, I think I've always said about PD, the exciting thing about him is he can get the puck, you know, in the corner and he'll still manage to, like, worm his way to the goal.
Yeah.
That's what I love about Quinn Hughes. He can be in the trickiest situation, in the neutral zone, or, like, even in the defensive zone, he still finds a way out of it and he still finds a way to make that play. And that's what you want to see on that first power play with PD and with Besa, those creative players all together.
I almost don't even care what Quinn Hughes does when they're in the zone. It's that I want Quinn Hughes just to help get more zone entries and set up more power play time in the opposition's end.
Because that's what seemed like such hard work, even getting it into
the zone. That is the hardest part of the power play, is gaining the zone. And Alex Edler just doesn't have that skill set. Like, I actually think Alex Edler is great once we're set up in the offensive zone. He can hammer the puck. Chances are he can get the puck through a good amount of time, but, like, he just doesn't have the ability to carry the puck into the opposition zone like Quinn Hughes can. And that's what I'm more concerned about than anything, is that there's not enough sustained zone time for the Canucks on power plays to be of real threat when they're in on the power play. So tell me, two games into the season, Anna, what kind of power play units would you want to see in an ideal world?
I mean, for sure, I want Hughes, PD, Besser on that first unit. Alongside them, I guess I definitely want Miller.
Josh Levo on power play one, by the way.
Yep.
That's been another
big
question mark.
That's the thing that's been happening. I'm not that passionate about it, but... Okay. Yeah, keep going. Sorry.
Vivid Seat Studio.
Yeah.
PA announcements. Don't worry. Doesn't sound important.
I'm sure the building isn't on fire. It'll probably be fine. I see your idea is having Horvat on that line, on that unit as well. I'm kind of okay with him being on the second one, but...
I don't even think Josh Levo should be on the second power play unit.
I mean... Who do you... Okay, so...
So here's what I would like to see.
Give me your second unit.
I agree, first of all, with you when you said Hughes, Pettersson, and Besser need to be on the first unit. 100%. I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest stacking that unit. Give me JT, Miller, and Bo Horvat on that first unit as well with these guys. Horvat is the net front presence. I want Besser and Pettersson on the wings, and I'd have Miller somewhere in that slot area in front of the net. And then you'd have Quinn Hughes at the top. You can even put Miller on one of the points if you really feel so inclined. You can have Pettersson on the point too. Then on that second unit, what I'd like to see is Ferland and Pearson on the wings. I'd like to see Gaudette in front, and I'd like to see Myers and Edler on power play too.
Yeah. I think my only concern is the stacking is that... The second unit.
But when you're 0-10, you can't afford to be choosy either.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. So I'm inclined to agree with you from that point of view, even though it's going against my kind of nature to stack it that way.
The only concern that I would have with that stacked power play unit, and I think it's a fair thing, is that there's only one right-handed shot on that unit, that being Brock Besser. And I know that there is something to say, and I haven't played enough hockey in my lifetime to know about how important handedness is in some situations. But I think that's why, one of the reasons anyway, that Josh Levo is on one of those top units.
Yeah, I think some coaches care more about it than others. Travis Green certainly cared about it more on the other end of things. But I don't know if it's like a huge concern.
There will come a time when we see Quinn Hughes placed on power play one, Anna. And he will never give that spot back. It's all a matter of when. But the way I see it, like, this team's time to start, quote-unquote, building momentum is now. And why not get Quinn Hughes the power play one time? Why not hand him the keys, if you will, to power play one? Why delay the inevitable?
See, yeah, I think in both of our minds, he's already earned that spot from his play last season. So it's frustrating for sure. But hopefully... It's now seen like 0-10. That's a nice round number. Did not work well. Let's give Hughes what he wants and what everyone else wants. Put him on power play one.
I agree. Before we take a break, Anna, the Vancouver Canucks making a trade over the weekend, sending defenseman Alex Biega to the Detroit Red Wings in exchange for... What was his first name?
His last name is very memorable.
His last name is Pope.
Oh, shoot.
And I feel so bad having...
Okay, there's a cricketer called Pope as well, so I need to not get confused.
Nothing but the best here on the C4 podcast prepare for shows
so
in
great.
The best way possible. But Vancouver
David,
Canucks,
David.
Thank you. Not to be confused with former David, David Booth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Clay would be happy with that, with his Booth jersey.
So there's a couple things to think of here. And first of all, what are you feeling, I guess, is the first question I would ask about this trade for trading Alex Biega.
It's just like kind of a little warm, fuzzy trade. It's not for any particular hockey reasons. I don't think David Pope, who's like not played even that much in the AHL, is going to move the needle even for Utica, never mind Canucks. But I'm grateful for what Alex Biega's done for us. We've always called him a very serviceable player, and he's given his all. He's been an absolute professional. So if there's a shot for him to make some waves in Detroit or in their AHL setup, where there's not so many defensemen kind of stacked down there, good for him.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that came to my mind was I was a little sad.
Sure.
He's a character, and like if you read some of the quotes from reporters that cover the Vancouver market, nothing but positive things to say about Alex Biega, like as a person and as a professional, like always giving thoughtful responses to answers when asked. I think this is a guy who knew his place in the Canucks system, knew that it was as a bubble guy who doesn't sort of rock the boat, if you will. And I'm as sad as I am to lose a very serviceable depth defenseman like Alex Biega, like I'm all due respect to Michael Delzato, Eric Goodbranson, like I was not as sad to see them go.
No.
And that's partially because of the roles that those two were expected to play compared to what Alex Biega's was. But like Biega, the Bulldog, I'm going to be sad to not say that anymore.
I know. It's a fun name. It's a fun nickname for sure.
I am as sad as I am to see him go. I am also legitimately happy and hopeful that Biega can be a mainstay in the NHL, like even as a bottom pairing defenseman. And I think he's got that opportunity in Detroit where there's not a whole lot of depth on that blue line. I think I'm just sad. Like Biega has, and like you talk about, I think someone, Guillaume Brisebois and Brogan Rafferty, had nothing but positive things to say about Biega that was covered in The Athletic.
Yeah, I think he's just that kind of guy.
These were guys who were clearly pushing Biega down the depth chart, and yet he didn't have a bad thing to say about these guys, even though he was competing with them for ice time. So nothing but great memories for Alex Biega. I'm sad to see him go, but happy that he's going to get an opportunity to be an everyday NHL player in Detroit.
Yeah, I really hope that happens for him. And it will certainly be easier if he does end up in their AHL system. That is like a two-hour drive between the AHL team and their NHL team, not across the country.
As for David, I forgot his first name, Pope. I cannot profess to know anything about the guy. I followed Cam Robinson's tweets, who said that this was likely the Canucks doing Detroit a favor and sort of taking a contract back for a contract. I will be shocked if we ever see David Pope play in a Canucks jersey.
Yep.
But hey, former fourth round pick, 2013.
Cool name.
Why not? Cool name indeed. Coming up next, we're going to take a break, but talking a little bit of prospects watch, also previewing Wednesday night's home opener, Vancouver Canucks and the LA Kings. They will have a captain, breaking down what will be an electric 50th anniversary celebration on Wednesday night. Coming up next, C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that, because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
A reminder that you can use the promo code OVERTIME in the Vivid Seats app to save up to $100 on all ticket purchases. Anna, the home openers on Wednesday might be using the Vivid Seats app for that one.
Yeah, I would advise doing it. I mean, I'm already going, but you know, throw your hat in the ring.
You're doing what?
You know I'm going.
You're going to the home opener?
Yeah.
That is brand new information.
That's the Last Riders' first game of the season, home opener.
I have two family members also going to the game on Wednesday. I feel like everyone's going to the game except me.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Probably got it on their Vivid Seats app where they saved up to $100 on their purchase.
Yeah, they probably did that because they're smart.
Anyway, in an effort to research for this podcast, Anna, I did go back to the 40th anniversary celebration, which seems like just yesterday, actually. I remember where I was and what I was doing when Henrik Sedin was also named captain for the Vancouver Canucks.
Okay, paint us a picture. What was...
So, 40th anniversary. This was, of course, the eve of the 2011 season. You were just becoming a brand new fan back then.
Yeah, January 2011.
And the Vancouver Canucks brought out like 40 of their historic Vancouver Canucks who wore like numbers 1 through 40. They brought them out in tandem with like season ticket holder and stuff like that. And at the conclusion of it, Orlan Kurtenbach, Vancouver Canucks' first ever captain, presents Henrik Sedin with a jersey that has the C on it. And that was how they did the whole thing. So
50 is too many players.
So I hope trotting out 50 players because that will be a long ceremony. Even putting the Edmonton and Calgary ones to shame over the weekend.
Oh, my God. Do you remember the closing ceremony that Edmonton had for the closing of their old arena? You remember that? And it went on for like 2 or 3 hours.
Oh, maybe I've erased it from my mind. Maybe I'll go back and watch it because I'm a glutton for punishment. But, first of all, do you suspect that we'll know before that game who the captain will be?
No, not officially. I think it'll...
Do you think that they will keep it under wraps right until then?
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Not to the player.
Not to the players, of course. Like, internally, they will know who it is. I'm sure they already know.
But no, I think they are, like, saving it up. They're just going to announce it like a draft pick.
That is pretty cool. I think if they can do that
Except hopefully Stan Smith won't botch the name.
I only bring this up because if I remember correctly, when the Canucks named Marcus Naslund their captain back in, oh goodness, like the early 2000s, they were in Sweden and they named him captain during training camp. And it was kind of cool, but also like whatever. I can't remember in the 2010 season when they named Henrik captain. I can't remember if that was a secret or if that was public knowledge before they gave him that jersey. So I guess there are two trains of thought into how they will do this thing, but...
But I think they're really going all guns blazing for this 50th season.
I think they need to go for like the theatric rate.
Yeah, exactly. Here, right? So that's what I think they're doing.
So my dream scenario in this whole thing, and I think we mentioned this on a previous episode, is I hope they bring out Henrik Sedin for this one.
Yeah,
Bring out Henrik like they did with Orlan Kurtenbach to Henrik in 2010. And I hope they bring it out where Henrik Sedin is handing Bo Horvat the jersey that says the C on it.
That would be the perfect
thing. Gives the tingles. It puts the feeling in feeling places where I get a lot of feeling.
That your Elias the same, Pettersson
he,
center?
Yes, he gives me... Yes, in the Elias Pettersson nerves.
Yeah, I almost said something dirty earlier.
When you
talked about good Branson leaving. Now I'm regretting that I didn't. Yeah, that would be the perfect scenario, I think.
I hope so, too. Whatever they do is going to be fine, but that's how I've sort of envisioned it in my head going into Wednesday.
Yeah, and I hope Bo gets his proper moment and it's all just nice for him and it's not overshadowed by anything else and it's just... kind of just his moment there.
Has anything sort of changed since the last time we had this conversation? Are you Give me a percentage on how confident you are that it is, in fact, Bo Horvat on Wednesday night.
Yeah, it's got more. I'm got more confident, if anything.
I have too.
Especially since what was Aquilini was on the radio on Thursday, I want to say. But definitely between our last podcast, because I brought it up with Chris Faber.
Yeah.
And he said that the captaincy was the worst kept secret in Vancouver.
I think so too.
So I think that underlined the fact that we know who it is.
I think my mind just went for a spell last week or 2 weeks or whatever it was when a 1040 personality had suggested that it was not going to be Bo Horvat.
Yeah, and then he quickly got called out by the organization. Beep. Reverse,
Tim
delete.
Backing up that truck.
Yep, back paddling big time.
Yeah, as someone who's going, now that we know that you're actually going at it, like, what are your expectations for the experience of it? Because rarely do people get the opportunity to go to home openers, but let alone to home openers where there is going to be that sort of grand theatrical event where we name a captain. Like, there have been, I believe, 13 captains in Canuck history, and you get to sort of take part in that little bit of history, if you will, that happens on Wednesday night.
Yeah, so I know they've tweeted out an itinerary today.
Very detailed itinerary, by the way, to the minute.
To where the puck drops at 7:13 p.m.
Yep.
So I'll be mad if it's even a minute late. By the way, I doubt that's going to happen. Because normal games start at 7:09.
Prompt.
That's because that includes anthems and all of that.
Yep.
So they're expecting player introductions and the captaincy ceremony and any other 50th anniversary nonsense to get done in 4 minutes. Not going to happen.
So it's not going to get done by the time they say it's going to get done, is what you're saying.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm excited. Excited for the swag, whatever swag
so,
we end up getting.
So let's stop there for a second. What is your expectation on swag? When they give away free stuff at games, like, I went to training camp in Victoria, and they gave away a free Fruit of the Loom shirt that just had Canucks, like, screened on, and it has the training camp 2019 on.
Right.
I thought that was cool by itself. But I think for a season opener where it's like a hot ticket, if you will, the expectations for what constitutes free swag is so much higher than just going to a $10 training camp. What are you expecting from free swag? Like, bringing up to speed, like Edmonton, I think they gave away a free scarf, and I thought it looked pretty nice.
Scarf would be good.
And I can't remember what was at Calgary. Maybe Beardy Canuck can sort of speak to what was given away in Calgary, but... like, what are you expecting in terms of free swag?
I don't think it's going to be anything fancy. Like, it's either going to be a t-shirt or a scarf or something. And the t-shirt will be, like, terrible and extra large.
Mm.
You know, like, they give away those t-shirts during the game, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're all extra large and kind of cheap looking.
I don't know. Maybe I'm not correct on this one, but just, like, 50th anniversary, home opener. A Canucks captain is going to be crowned. Like,
what do you want then?
Those are all things. Like, I'm expecting it to be a spectacle on Wednesday night, as such, they need to deliver on the swag. Like,
okay.
I'm not saying that everybody needs to get a Canucks jersey, but like, if in fact it's Bo Horvat, for example, why not give away a Canucks like a one night only kind of shirt that's got like Horvat and the C on it or something like that.
Yeah, no, I think it will be, like, emblazoned with, you know, whatever makes this exclusive, you know, 50th anniversary, home opener. It's going to say, like, stuff like that.
This is going to be the second hottest ticket of the season, the hottest one being the Sedin's retirement night.
Yeah, which I am not going to. That was way out of my price range.
Oh, I thought you said you were.
I'm going to the Burroughs.
I was about to bring you through this very clear-looking glass.
My God. God, I'm a little scared now. No, I'm going to the Burroughs Ring of Honor night, which I'm excited about. But, yeah. No, I couldn't afford...
See, I would place the home opener ahead of the Burroughs Ring of Honor night.
Sure. But agree? I'm already going to that.
Yeah. Whatever.
So.
Anywho.
But, yeah. No, I think it'll be exciting. I think the sort of the light show kind of element will be pretty cool. They'll have some good, like, graphics and stuff thrown on the ice. And I have to say that having seen it in person now, like... I wasn't sure about the 50th season little logo they had going around.
Yeah, I'm all right with it. I've made my peace with it now.
But seeing it on the ice, it looks pretty cool when it's
not,
that big.
Yeah. I like it on the ice, too, better
especially
than it was when we first saw it.
Calgary's, like, they have the 40 in the middle.
The Sabres' 50th looked better, though, and that's what I was comparing it to.
I wasn't sold on their jerseys until I saw them playing hockey in them, and I do like them now, I have to say.
A very quick off-the-rails aside, how much did you appreciate the Roberto Luongo tweet Photoshop job that he did with the Canucks captains?
Yeah, that was good.
we don't deserve that national treasure that is Roberto Luongo.
I know. I love him.
Just before we wrap things up here on the C4 podcast, Anna, a quick prospects watch, if you will. Vasily Podkolzin not getting many minutes with SKA St. Petersburg in the KHL, sent down to the VHL, picking up a goal, looking like he's getting some first-line minutes in the VHL as well. Very positive for his development, because I was pretty close to being like, let's get this dude out of Russia ASAP kind of a mentality.
Right. Yeah, it didn't seem like he was suited to the KHL whatsoever, so whatever.
Just wasn't
best.
Getting minutes. Like, he was averaging less than 5 minutes a game.
Yeah, like, what's he supposed to
do? He probably got a cold once or twice sitting on the bench.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I am happy that he's somewhere that he can develop, yeah, in a way more effective manner.
It is incredibly remote, but part of me is hoping, like, Podkolzin will just try to pay his way out of that last year in the KHL and just get here faster.
I think let's just wait and see.
I know, but it's just like, I hate watching my, like, new crown jewel, if you will, in terms of prospects, wasting away prime development time playing 5 minutes a night in the KHL. Like, I want this guy getting tons of minutes. The World Juniors is only a 2-week long tournament. Like, get this guy in real game action so that he can be set up for NHL success. So I did not like what I was seeing in terms of Podkolzin's treatment in the KHL. So I'm happy he's at least getting 20 plus minutes a night in the VHL. Moving on down the list, Cole Lynn getting 3 helpers in the Utica Comets season debut, playing top line minutes. On the note of Cole Lynn, I think a lot of us saw the bumps in the road that he had in his first year of professional hockey. Hope springs eternal, Anna, that maybe this is a big development year for Cole Lynn.
Yeah, I know Chris Faber of Canucks Conversation Fame is a big Cole Lynn fan. I like what I've seen from him. I like the season opener. I watched the highlights of that. I really do have hope for him. It was a rough year, but he has a lot of fighting spirit. Like, if you listen to interviews of the guy, he has a really positive outlook, and really wants to develop his game, and he doesn't get frustrated. He just kind of gets to work, which is really positive to hear. So hopefully he can have a big year, and I hope maybe some of the vets clubbing up the top of the lineup might clear out.
A quick conversation on Utica, if you will. Aside from Cole Lind, Anna, who are maybe, give me 2 names that you're really sort of tracking their development in Utica this season.
I think Zach McEwen, newly minted assistant captain. Zach McEwen, I think we've seen him a bit up in the NHL, and he can compete at that level. Needs a bit more fine tuning, so hopefully that happens.
Yep.
In his new leadership role in Utica. And I'm just really interested to see what happens with the goaltenders, just especially, like, if Mikey DiPietro can really develop his game after that one terrifying game he had at NHL level.
The equivalent of watching it in theaters as an 18-year-old, I think, is the best way of putting it. Just, what did I just watch?
Yeah, mildly terrifying. So he seems to be doing well in their preseason, so but I think there's a lot of competition in that net, and they've got Richard Backman as the kind of father figure to guide them along the way.
So I'll throw in a couple names myself, and I'll start with Ole Olevi, of course, and he picked up an assist in the Utica Comets debut. And I think we're just sort of not hopeful, but it's like I'm cautiously optimistic. This is a quote-unquote TSN turning point, if you will, for Ulevi's development, and I'm hoping it is a healthy year for him, and the Lord knows the Canucks need it. So Ulevi's one that I'm going to be really watching, and I think just in the same vein as Colin, Jonah Gadjevic, that's someone who sort of seems to be the forgotten piece in terms of everyone had the hype on Gadjevic. Now he's no longer the big name that we've had drafted, and now it's down to business for Gadjevic, so hoping for a big year in terms of his development as well, because I don't think, as much as people may have forgotten about Gadjevic, we can't lose sight of the fact that he does have quite a bit of promise. Anna, as we wrap things up here on the C4 podcast, why don't you tell people where they can find us?
Yep. So you can find us on Twitter. We're at the C4 podcast. I'm the main one between the tweets now, occasionally Chris. We're never giving Matt the keys ever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's obviously a lot funnier now that I'm in charge. We're also on Facebook. We're at C4 Podcast. So just search that up and we're there. All our episodes go on both. They also go on our website, which is c4podcast.com. But if you are looking for the chatter, the real discussion, the meat and potatoes talk, you want to head to Discord. So we're at
meat and potatoes talk. How dare you drop that reference in here?
A little Jim Betting reference for you. So we're at bit.ly/C4Discord. That's bit.ly/C4Discord, all caps. And yeah, that's where we talk. I mean, it's mainly hockey, but we do have an off-topic thread that where, for example, people talk about fantasy football, the wrong kind of football, unfortunately. Or where Chris likes to put his like vacation photos to make us all jealous.
What a guy.
I know.
Thank you for that. A quick thing on the C4 Fantasy Hockey League, well underway. I would just like to point out...
We're not even through our first week yet, so...
Yeah, we're not through our first week, but special shout out to Adam Ovenell Carter, who texted me earlier this morning asking me... Hold on, let me find it here. There was quite a bit of discussion that we had this morning. But essentially saying to me, what kind of person set the scoring system for this league is essentially what he started with. Or who the hell came up with the scoring for our hockey league? It's whack, dude. Goalies especially. There's just no risk or benefit to anything, it seems like. There's literally no consequence to having a blank goalie. Jacob Markstrom last year had more fantasy points than David Pastrnak. Well, Adam, I'll tell you this, because I know you download and don't listen. Maybe if you were actually present for the draft,
yep,
and not the only one who auto-drafted, your team would be better.
Yeah. I'm sorry, you made your bed, Adam.
So stick that in your pipe. It's a free league, dude. Come on, Adam. Anyway, everyone, feel free to give him some flack on Discord, if you will, if you're taking part in the Fantasy Hockey League this year.
I know no one cares, but I have a fantasy football, like real football.
No, that's not fantasy football then.
But
No.
And it's going so badly.
Okay, that makes sense.
Like, I have two goalies. One of them got carried off the pitch on a stretcher at the weekend.
Is one of them Gianluigi Buffon?
No, because he doesn't play in the Premier League. Has to be Premier League. So, got
David
carried off
Osted?
The pitch. No. And the other one has joined Karabag, which is a team, I believe, in Azerbaijan on loan. So, yeah. No one can be doing worse than me.
You said a bunch of things I don't even know. Anna, as we wrap things up here on the C4 podcast, maybe some last thoughts.
Just that I'm really, really, really excited for Wednesday.
Really, really?
I'm really, really excited for Wednesday.
What time do you want to pick me up for the game?
Let me do a rain check and I'll text you about that, okay?
Last ditch effort.
yeah, I'm sure there's some free tickets, some tickets.
I'm sure the free tickets are just lying around for the home opener. Yeah.
Yeah, why don't you just look around in some Willy Wonka bars and
we'll
maybe you'll find
it. We'll check the Vivid Seat Studio app.
There we go. But yeah, I'm really excited. And oh, Captain, my captain, I'm excited for Bo.
The question for me, if Louis Erickson is a healthy scratch, does he get the seat in his street clothes or?
You're such a wind-up merchant, it's unreal.
Yeah. Again, right off the top of the show, not panic. A 2, if anything, out of 10 in terms of panic level right now.
Sunny, positive Matt, I love it.
It's just realistic. Like, the team needs to gel. If they're still struggling after 10 games, then I will be ultra concerned. By then, Travis Green might not have a job.
Wow.
Just saying.
Wow, 10 games in and you're sacking Green.
Look, it's happened before. It has definitely happened in the NHL before, where teams that came out to slow starts that had high expectations have fired their head coach. It is not out of the realm of possibility. I would obviously peg the chances being very slow, very low, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. Yeah, that's it for me. On behalf of Anna Forsyth at aForsyth03, I'm Matt Lee at Matt_Lee_61. On behalf of the absent Chris Golden at Light Force in Hawaii or whatever Damn you, Chris. And Adam Ovenell Carter at Steamworks. Go check him out at Adam FOC on Twitter. We're out.